From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, stories of high strangeness with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe, followed by conversations with Linda. But here's what's happening. The Transportation Security Administration says it's unlikely to detect and unable to extinguish what FBI reports call the greatest potential threat to aviation. Thermite, a mixture of rust and aluminum powder, could be used against a commercial aircraft, according to the TSA, warning in a December 2014 document marked secret. They say the ignition of a thermite-based incendiary device on an aircraft at an altitude could result in catastrophic damage and the death of every person on board. Just one more thing to worry about when we fly. The masked Islamic State militant known as Jihadi John, who has been pictured in the videos of the beheadings of Western hostages, has now been named. He is Mohammed Emwazi, a Kuwaiti-born British man in his mid-20s from West London, who was previously known to British security services. Emwazi first appeared in a video last August when he apparently killed the U.S. journalist James Foley. Well, now they know his name. They know his family. Let's see if they can find him. The Islamic State group released a video showing militants using sledgehammers to smash ancient artifacts in Iraq's northern city of Mosul, describing the relics as idols that must be removed. What a shame. These things were so old, back, some of them dating back to the 7th century B.C. Unbelievable. Smashed all of them. President Obama is using executive actions to impose some kind of gun control on the nation, targeting the top-selling rifle in the country, the AR-15-style semi-automatic, with a ban on one of the most used AR bullets by sportsmen and target shooters. Let's check in, of course, with the expert, John Lott, president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. John, is this story got some teeth to it, or is it one of those internet rumors?
Well, unfortunately, it's something that looks like it's going to happen. The Obama administration appears that it's already made up its mind, even though there will be a brief comment period that will be allowed over the next few weeks. But, they weren't able to go and ban AR-15, so they want to try to go and ban the ammunition, the most popular ammunition that is used in the gun. But more troubling, just as they've done in other areas, they're just kind of ignoring the existing law and just making up the rules as they go along.
Is this going to be an executive order, John?
Well, that's basically what they're saying. It's going to be something that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is going to make an official decision on. But it's obvious that that higher up in the administration has essentially told them what conclusion they want them to reach.
And when will this take effect? Do you know?
Well, the comment period will end the middle of March. It just depends how quickly they do it after that. They seem to say that this has to be done in a rush. There's no explanation for why that should be the case, but it could be in a matter of a month or two after that.
All right, John, thanks. And, of course, everybody's going to line up to get ammunition before it's all gone, so they can't ban guns because of our Second Amendment, right? But they may be able to stop ammunition, so what good are the guns if they do that? Tom Schweik, Missouri's Republican state auditor and a leading contender for the governor's office there in the next year's election, is dead after apparently shooting himself in his Clayton home. He killed himself. He lived 6 blocks from me here in the St. Louis area. The sudden death of the second-term auditor shocked and saddened the state's political establishment. He had a pretty good chance of getting that Republican nomination. A video game addict burned himself to death after being tipped over the edge when his father told him to stop playing and get some sleep. He's an online fan, 22 years old, from Taiwan. He'd been in his room at his family's home, locked in there for hours and hours and hours. His father knocked on the door. Kid let him in. He said, "Look, go to sleep." The two then exchanged heated words. The father told his son, "Look, I'm fed up with you and your gaming, and I want you to stop." Well, the next day, he realized his son was missing. He went outside to look for him. He couldn't find him. He kept walking. He found the boy's charred remains 300 meters away from the house, empty bottles of gasoline lying nearby. Oh, wow. New rules on how the internet should be governed have been approved by the Federal Communications Commission. And what is seen as a victory for advocates of net neutrality, the commission voted in favor of changes proposed by Chairman Tom Wheeler. The U.S. Telecommunications Industry Association said the broadband providers would take immediate legal action over the rule changes. Let's check in with the expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, put it in perspective for us. Now, what does this mean?
Well, let me check here and see if the internet's still working. Yeah, it looks pretty good.
It is still working today, so far.
Basically, two things happened. One thing that's very interesting that hasn't gotten most of the press today is that there was a vote that sets a template to roll back some of these laws that the dominant ISPs have gotten in some states that have prevented communities from building or expanding their own municipal networks, internet networks. This has gotten very important because in a lot of these communities, the big ISPs had pushed through those laws and they had never built the systems they had promised to build, so the people in those communities ended up with nothing. So that's actually very good news for people that want to see more alternatives, more competition. And, of course, the big ruling was the Title II ruling that we were talking about a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty clear that was going to go through. And we haven't seen all the details of it yet. Oddly enough, the reason for that right now is that the two GOP members of the commission are holding it up because they want to put all their comments in, apparently, before it's all released. At some point here, we'll see all the details. But what we know right now, it follows the framework that we've been expecting. Basically what it does, it has nothing to do with taxes. It has nothing to do with monitoring. It has nothing to do with limiting free speech. What it does do is it sets up a framework so that when the big ISPs are abusing their subscribers or abusing sites that are trying to use them, and again, the Netflix-Verizon conflict is a good example of that, which, of course, affected consumers when they tried to watch movies and it was every 5 seconds buffering. It sets in place the mechanism so that there's a way to complain, a way to investigate those complaints, and to take action on those complaints, which, oddly enough, unlike almost everywhere else in the world, we haven't had a way to do in this country because the big ISPs have said, hey, these are our networks and we can do what we want to do. We'll see the details. Like you said, there's going to be lawsuits. You know, the big ISPs that don't want to, you know, take this sitting down, obviously. There, Congress will probably, you know, there's people in Congress who are going to do the bidding of those dominant ISPs. But I think from a subscriber standpoint, and that's, you know, most of us are just ordinary subscribers. We pay our bill every month. We need to have the internet working for us. I think this is actually a very good day for the internet. And I say this from the standpoint of someone that, you know, was basically using the internet before it was the internet. So I think I have a good historical perspective on this. And I think a lot of what we're hearing, the kind of doom and gloom stuff we're hearing is basically just politics in action. We will see. We will see the details.
We will see.
We'll see how it all comes out.
At this point, you're not too concerned about it.
I'm not concerned at all about it right now. I mean, obviously, we want to see the details. I think it's a good thing. I think we have seen too many examples of these companies, these big internet companies, these big ISPs like Verizon and Comcast has been voted the most hated company in the United States. I mean, it takes effort to get there. They have been running these networks the way they want to run them, and if you've had a problem with them, I mean, you've heard the stories, you've heard about the things they've done to people. They've had subscribers where their customer service people have been changing the names of subscribers to obscenities. You know, and what does Comcast say? Well, look, you know, we're sorry. You know, it's really, the internet is the basis of our whole communications world now. Phone calls, emergency systems.
It's everything.
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 We can't be treating it like it's a toy anymore. We have to be treating it like a utility because it's as important to us now as electricity, as gas, as water. There's ways to do it right. There's ways to do it wrong. This is the start with Title II. There's going to be fine-tuning. There's going to be changes. But I think we have now sort of taken the step toward being adults about how we deal with the internet now.
All right. I'm going to let you watch this for us, Lauren, and then check back with us. Four students have been arrested on drug charges and suspended after 10 students and two visitors took MDMA, popularly known as Molly, and they were hospitalized at a university in Middletown, Connecticut, University Hospital. The charges all relate to possession and distribution of drugs. What is this drug? In a moment, we'll check in with pharmacist Ben about this incredible story next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Pharmacist Ben Fuchs, is part of the CriticalHealthNews.com team, and he brings you, of course, specialized news inserts throughout the week here on Coast to Coast AM. He has looked at nutrition. He's been a cosmetic chemist, and I want him to react with us this hour about this story of a drug popularly known as Molly. A number of students rushed to a university hospital a few days ago in Middletown, Connecticut, some of them in critical condition. Ben, first of all, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, George. Good to hear from you. Good to talk to you.
This drug, MDMA, now, it's not that new, though. It's been around, hasn't it?
Well, MDMA is not Molly. So let's I want to just be clear about that. And even the press gets confused about that. MDMA has been around for a long time. It's been around since the early 1900s, 1912, somewhere around there, is when it was first patented. You know, drugs are very fascinating. We didn't really know a lot about biochemistry or about medicine or about how to manipulate the chemistry of the body until somewhere in maybe the late 18th century. Aspirin came around in 1899. That's when we really start to figure things out. And once chemists got the idea and had developed the technologies and the tools to develop these things, they were like kids in a candy store. They were playing around with all kinds of molecules. Mm-hmm. They were playing around with all kinds of new detection devices, and they started creating all of these compounds. And the first thing they thought of, one of the early systems they wanted to modify in the body, was the circulatory system, the blood system. And so MDMA was one of the early blood drugs. It was a vasoconstrictor type drug. It closed up blood vessels, and they played around with it a little bit, but they kind of stuck it on the shelf. A company called Merck stuck it on the shelf. And over the course of time, they picked it up here and there, and they noticed that it had some psychoactive effects, but they didn't really think too much of it until after World War II. And you remember Operation Paperclip when the Nazis came?
Yeah, when we brought some of the key players,
right,
like Wernher von Braun and people like that.
Right, but they also brought chemists. The Germans
were big in
chemistry. They were big in drugs, and they were big in manipulating the mind through chemistry, manipulating the mind through drugs. They developed some of the first amphetamine-type drugs and the first psychoactive substances, and they were very early in exploring the connection between chemistry and medicine and mind control. And so when the Germans came over here, and there was the whole Cold War thing going on, the Russians were also big into this. There was these things like MK Ultra, kind of experiments on soldier volunteers with hallucinogenic drugs and psychoactive substances. The thought was we could use these psychoactive substances as part of a way of extracting information from spies, perhaps, or as part of a chemical warfare kind of thing. And so along with this, we were learning about the mind and psychology and psychiatry. There were the early psychiatric drugs had just come out, and they were kind of on the search for mind control type substances. And lo and behold, they remembered MDMA. So they thought, okay, let's use MDMA. And they tried MDMA, but it wasn't toxic enough. It wasn't strong enough. So they kind of shelved it. But once a drug gets out into the world of research and the world of academia, it's not very long before people start playing with it.
Uh-huh.
They start experimenting with it, right?
They
started to experiment with MDMA. So researchers did and academicians did, and they started to notice some very interesting results. One of the early academicians to experiment with MDMA was a guy named Leo Zeff, and he was a psychiatrist, I believe. And he started playing with it, and he started using it in therapy. And he started to find and report some amazing results with this MDMA. People were finding God, and they were back in love again, and they were all their anxiety issues were gone. I mean, miraculous kinds of things.
Hmm.
And he started to promote it. He started to talk about it. He told another one of his friends, a guy named Alexander Shulgin, who was a synthesis chemist, and Alexander Shulgin started to play with synthesizing the compound, and he too found the same results. And between Leon, this guy Dr. Zeff, and Alexander Shulgin, they started proselytizing about MDMA. And Pretty soon, college kids were starting to use it. And this is not, now we're talking the early 1980s.
Where would they get it? Who would make it?
It was legal.
It was legal. Okay.
So you could get it anywhere. Any lab can make it.
Is this like a derivative of methamphetamine?
Yes. It's a type of amphetamine. It's dimethylene methamphetamine, something along those lines. It's a type of
amphetamine. Walter White would love this from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, it's exactly that same idea. But here's the thing. As soon as kids started to do it and they started to have these experiences, and they called it ecstasy because these experiences were so ecstatic, they were religious experiences. In fact, there was a guy named Michael Clegg, who's a Catholic seminary student in Dallas. He actually started an 800 number to give people ecstasy. They were selling it in bars in the early 80s, 1984, 85.
Oh, yeah, they were selling it in clubs everywhere.
Clubs. It was legal, though.
Yeah.
And so for some reason, for whatever reason, the government didn't like it. And, you know, you could read into it however you want to read into that. And they banned it. The DEA called it, actually enacted an emergency ban on it until they could adjudicate a ban, until they could legislate a ban. And that was about 1986. And then it gradually became harder to get. Although from 1986 to about 1990, it was still probably around a little bit, but it kept getting harder and harder to get. And the federal government started to monitor the raw materials, and they put people in jail for a very long time. So, people like to do drugs, George. This is just the nature. It's like a drive.
It's sad, but it's true.
You know, you're not gonna. That's a genie you're not gonna put back in the bottle. That's just the nature of humanity. And by the way, animals like to do drugs too. Do you know this? Elephants and monkeys and cows and sheep and cats and dogs and birds. They all like to get high. They all like to be intoxicated for whatever reason. It's almost like it's a drive. And so. Even though the government made it illegal, and they made it very difficult to obtain, so what happened was chemists started to tweak the molecule around, and they started to look for alternatives. And so they found this really interesting family of compounds that's found in a plant called khat. Have you heard of this stuff, khat?
Khat, I have not.
Khat is K-H-A-T. It grows in Somalia. And in the Middle East type area, Northeast Africa kind of area. And this stuff, khat, has these natural compounds that are they're similar to ecstasy, to MDMA. Not quite MDMA, but similar. And so drug companies began to experiment with manipulating creating analogs of this khat molecules, and they created a family of compounds called cathinones, or synthetic cathinones. The cathinones are in khat, but the synthetic cathinones.
And how would they use it?
I'll tell you in fact, it's very interesting. So the cathinones actually have some drug companies were using them. There's an antidepressant called Wellbutrin.
Have you heard of Wellbutrin? Yep.
Wellbutrin is a synthetic cathinone. And so drug companies start to experiment with it, and they came upon a couple of them. They're very interesting. One's called methylone. These are synthetic cathinones. Methylone, and the other one is called, but these things are not quite ecstasy or MDMA, but they're similar to MDMA. They're close enough to MDMA, and because MDMA is so difficult to find, people start to use this stuff instead. And this is what's going by the name Molly, and it's also what's going by the name bath salts, if you've heard of bath salts, right?
Yeah.
This is what bath salts are. Bath salts are synthetic cathinones that come from the khat plant that were developed as a way of getting people a sort of MDMA-like high. It's not really like MDMA, but it's kind of sorta, and it's good enough for people who aren't really picky. They just want to get high, and plus it has the advantage of you can't find it in the drug test yet. So there's a lot of advantages to it for people who actually want to get be intoxicated or get high on it, but it's not MDMA, and it's not as benign as MDMA. It's not as gentle as MDMA.
Hence these people in critical condition in the hospital.
All of that. If you read further in the article, it'll say Molly, and it'll imply, and sometimes it'll downright say, ecstasy or MDMA, but then if you read further, they'll call it a bad batch, or they'll say something
like... Right, that's what they're saying about this.
Right, they'll call it bad. What they mean is it's not MDMA. It has nothing to do with MDMA. It's a completely different substance. MDMA used to be called Molly because MDMA was known as the molecule, and Molly is short for the molecule, right? And so MDMA used to be Molly, but when MDMA became illegal, because Molly is kind of a generic term, it's not a scientific term or anything, they just started calling this methylone stuff and the synthetic cathinone stuff. they started calling that Molly. And that's what people are doing when they take Molly, and that's what people are having a problem with. But the original MDMA is a really somewhat benign substance, and you know, no, there's no benign drugs, of course. They're all toxic, and none of them are good for you. But relatively speaking, in the world of pharmaceuticals, in the world of drugs, considering, according to the statistics I read, there's 16 million Americans who've used the stuff. You know, we're talking a significant amount of the population.
Mostly young kids?
Well, they're not young anymore because it's been around for so
long. Yeah, that's so true. Stay with us, Ben. We're going to take this quick break. We'll be back with pharmacist Ben as we talk about this drug, this popular drug now known as Molly, that's being used in schools and a lot of clubs. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back. Pharmacist Ben Fuchs with us. And, of course, he is part of CriticalHealthNews.com. And, Ben, I'm so glad that you're part of that organization. You bring so much credibility to it.
Wow, thank you, George.
And,
I appreciate that.
Great knowledge, too.
Thank you.
CriticalHealthNews.com. So back to this drug, Molly. First of all, I don't endorse taking these drugs, but how do you know if you're a kid and you're buying these or an adult?
Don't.
And you're getting junk.
Caveat emptor. You know, drugs are, drugs are not to be trifled with. They're serious business, you know.
They could kill you.
Yeah, of course. People, there's no good drugs, and that's illegal or legal. You know, they're the same. The only difference is one is sanctioned and the other isn't. Now, of course, you have you know what you're getting when you buy a prescription drug, and you don't know what you're getting when you buy an illegal drug. But the point is they all work by poisoning the body, literally, not metaphorically, not poetically. I'm not exaggerating here. You have a poison control system in your liver. And every drug you take, whether it's from the doctor or whether it's from the kid on the street, whatever it is, it's going through your liver. It's sucking up nutrients. It requires processing chemistry to take place. It's depriving you of being able to use that processing chemistry for other things, to fight cancer, for example. And it's an unnecessary load on the body any way you look at it. But, George, listen, I don't believe that we should be legislating what people put into their bodies. That doesn't seem right to me in a free culture.
I agree.
In a free society.
I agree.
We should be able to do what we want to do. This is your body is your personal space, right? I mean, if we live in a free society, there has to be boundaries somewhere, and there has to be somewhere. You think your body would be a boundary? How can it be that there have people in jail for 10, 15, 20, sometimes even for life, for chemicals simply because they've been legislated as illegal? And in the case, by the way, of MDA, it was over the screaming loud voices of hundreds of therapists who swore that they needed this stuff to cure PTSD and help people deal with grief and cancers and all kinds of other tragic events in their life. And they were getting great success with it. And then you get a government body, a government agency that comes in and just says no. Just like that. Now, they did adjudicate it later on, but as it turns out, they used, according to the story anyway, they used literature that was of poor quality to prove their point of degeneration associated with MDMA.
Well, who's making this so-called Molly drug now and distributing it to all these kids at clubs and places?
Oh, it's coming in from China. It's coming in from overseas. It comes in through it's made in India and Asia, Russia, and it comes in through Europe, and then it comes into the United States. A lot of it comes in through England.
How do you know you're not eating rat poison or something?
You don't know anything, George, when you're buying stuff. You don't know nothing.
Kids are nuts.
That's crazy, really.
It really is
crazy to go to a club and to take a pill that somebody gave you. And I'm telling you this as a pharmacist. It really is.
Is this an epidemic, Ben?
What's an epidemic is that people are so desperate to get high. It's an epidemic. People are so, for whatever reason it is, they're so desperate to get high, they'll do whatever it takes. You know, they'll snort gasoline, they'll snort fumes to get high. That's the problem. Why is it that we are so desperate to get out of our lives that we want to get
people
high?
People are
now,
down. They're depressed. They're trying to escape.
Yeah,
let's take some calls here for you, Ben. They're lining up. We'll pick it up by going to Phoenix, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Cheryl gets us started, and you're on the air with us. Cheryl, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Well, I'm very concerned because I know someone in Connecticut that, you know, does Molly every so often.
Oh,
and I'm just wondering about what happened to these people that are in the hospital. If I could tell this person this information, perhaps.
What happens to them in the hospital?
Well, some are in critical condition. They've got severe episodes. I mean, to get in critical condition, taking Molly, and what are some of the symptoms? Heart issues,
well,
and everything else.
You know, here's the thing. Nobody just takes Molly. people drink.
They take everything else. It's a mixture.
It's a mixture. Nobody knows. That's why there's no statistics on these things. Nobody knows because they're dancing and they're drinking and they're doing other drugs. And nobody really knows what's causing what. So it's very rare for something like this to happen. And it was probably like, you know, like they said, somebody makes a batch and some of it's done in home bathtub kind of operations. And you never know what you're getting.
Well, this is what the police chief Ben says in Middletown, Connecticut. This particular batch may have had a mixture of several kinds of designer drug chemicals, making the health risks unpredictable and treatment to combat the effects complex and problematic.
Well, here's the thing. There's a lot you can do. If somebody was to do Molly, just so they know, and there and some kind of toxicity occurs, that's not talking about life-threatening toxicity, but just some kind of untoward effects, there's things that you can do. First of all, you'd never want to eat any foods that mess up your blood sugar. This is a big problem people do when they drink, too, by the way, is they throw off their blood sugar. So when you, if you're going to put food in your stomach after you're drinking or after you're doing drugs, make sure it's food that is not going to throw off blood sugar and it's going to be easy for the body to process, soups and juices kind of things. Also, make sure you're doing nutrition. Vitamin C is tremendously protective against the, against some of the brain, neurological toxicities that are associated with Molly. Vitamin E also is very protective. But the B complex is protective. There's a lot of nutrients that you could do. Also, if you're going to know you're going to do Molly, do nutrition before you do the Molly, and don't put any toxic food in your system. Do vegetable juices. Now, I know people who are out there doing Molly aren't going to be juicing necessarily, but these are still strategies that you can use if you want to mitigate the effects of pharmaceuticals. You know, George, a lot of people who do these kinds of drugs are not healthy, and this is a lot of the problem as well. They're not strong. They're not. They're eating junk food. They're not nutritionally. They're not nutritionally loaded. They don't have the nutrients that they need. So a lot of this compounds the toxicity associated with Molly. Compounds the toxicity associated with drugs. And if you are doing drugs, by the way, prescription drugs included, it becomes extra important that you watch what you eat, that you stabilize your blood sugar, that you use nutritional supplements, so that you treat yourself as kindly and as gently as you possibly can, and you give your body the wherewithal to process the drugs if you're going to take them, prescription or illegal.
Well, you know, Ben, it's just crazy that they take these with the possibility that they could pass out, they could die. Don't they think about those possibilities?
You know, George, kids... You know, I did crazy things when I was a kid, and most of these are kids. Most of that, you're immortal when you're a kid, you know? You don't think about these things when you're a kid.
Well, I did. I was a nerd. I don't know.
Okay, maybe. But for, you know, a lot of kids, they think they live forever. They can't comprehend what, you know, something bad can happen. So you take much more risks. I noticed that I took a lot more risks when I was younger than I did when I'm older. As I get older, I'm thinking to myself, what the heck was I thinking when I was back?
I know.
You know, the brain isn't fully developed until 25 or so. You know this? The frontal cortex, the prefrontal cortex, is not fully developed until a kid is in his 20s.
Let's go to Kevin, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Kevin, welcome to the program. You are up with us. Go ahead, Kev.
Hello, thanks. I just want to ask a quick question because I heard him mention Wellbutrin.
Yeah.
I've been on antidepressant medication, all kinds of medications, since 91.
Wow.
And I heard George... Another guest talking about being a walking corpse.
Dr. Peter Bregan.
And I have been to my psychiatrist. He wants to hospitalize me because he says there's nothing else they can do.
Is that how you feel?
I feel like that.
Do you feel like that?
Walking corpse syndrome. Right?
Oh, my goodness. That's horrible. That's tragic. But you know what? That's like a textbook classic description of what these drugs do to you. They neutralize your affect. They neutralize your mood. So you don't go up, you don't go down, you don't get depressed, but you don't go up either. You're just neutral. And what makes us human is the ups and the downs. So in a sense, your description, it's a very, very apt description. The sense of neutrality of not going up and not going down is really almost like being dead. It's almost like being a walking corpse.
Ben, you're a registered pharmacist. Are you saying, folks, don't take prescription drugs?
Well...
At
I'm saying,
all?
Know what you're doing. I'm saying there's no benign drugs. I'm saying the effects that you want when you take a prescription drug are nothing more than toxicities, and really side effects and effects are the same. They're the same disturbances in chemistry. It's just that by targeting a specific side effect or toxicity and making it so it can be therapeutic on some level, or apparently therapeutic, it can modify some of your chemistry, it makes it look like it's a healing device. But it really is working by the very nature that it's, by the very fact that it's of toxic nature. That's how it works. So do you want to take a toxin to get better? George, listen, I'm a pharmacist, right? And it never made sense to me from day one in pharmacy school how taking a poison could make you better. It just doesn't compute. Yeah, yes, you can lower your cholesterol. Yes, you can modify your blood sugar numbers or your thyroid hormone numbers, whatever. You can change the markers, but how can you change health? How can you improve health with a poison? It just
You can't. No, you've got a huge article at criticalhealthnews.com, which I hope will help people who are on this stuff or even contemplating it, Ben. Next up, we go to Jim in Kansas City, Missouri, first-time caller. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi, Jim.
I just wanted to get out there because you guys are missing what is an addiction. The brain's sole purpose is a heart rate, and they use in methadone clinics B vitamins while we're awake. If you use them while you are asleep, it ends all addiction.
What's that now? B vitamins? Are you saying B vitamins?
B vitamins and go to sleep. And then you're paralyzed. That allows the brain to get the energy rush from the B vitamins.
So you're saying obviously take the B. Oh, yeah. We all take supplements and things like that. But can you get addicted to Molly, Ben?
No, that's not an addictive type drug. You can... you know, you can get addicted to anything theoretically, but I don't know necessarily that Molly addiction, I haven't heard of Molly addiction, no. I suppose you could be addicted to anything, like this gentleman says. Addiction is kind of like a disease in and of itself, but I don't know necessarily that Molly is addicting.
Do parents, how will they know? What are some of the symptoms that their kids are taking this stuff?
Jitteriness, anxiety. They'll be sleeping a lot the next day or after they go out. They'll be staying up late at night to the wee hours. Sleeping till like noon or till 1 or 2 o'clock, those kinds of things. You know, usually when a kid is doing a lot of drugs, there are other signs. Healthy, strong kids who are emotionally or mentally strong and resilient, they may experiment with drugs, but if they're addiction is about self-soothing. Addiction is about self-medicating. Addiction starts at a very young age, by the way, George. It's from when kids learn to soothe themselves, to nurture themselves, because they're not getting nurturing from the outside. They imprint. You know how we're supposed to imprint on our parents, on our caregivers, but if that imprinting doesn't occur on our caregivers, we'll imprint on anything that gives us nurturing and sustenance. And it could be our thumb, it could be a pacifier. Ultimately, when you discover drugs, it could be drugs. You begin to transfer that kind of expectation of love and nurturing that you're supposed to get from your parents, you begin to transfer it externally on some kind of device or some kind of tool. And that's really what addiction is about at its core. And you'll notice that's why people don't want to give up addiction, because they're giving up, that's why it's so strong, because they're giving up their only tool that they know of for self-soothing. And so you can become addicted or imprinted on any outside device. And it could theoretically be, you know, synthetic cathinones, but I don't know necessarily that the chemistry of synthetic cathinones will cause withdrawal.
Sharon's in Crane, Missouri now. Hey, Sharon, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi.
I have a niece who is 45 years old, and she has been bipolar most of her life. Now, she got into cocaine, she got into alcohol, she got into Xanax, Wellbutrin, just about anything that you can name, she's probably tried it. And then she got into bath salt. She lost her marriage.
No.
She lost her child. Her child, some of the things that she did in the presence of her child, the child is now in counseling. She took him on drug runs with her.
Jeez.
Oh, my goodness.
There's all kinds of things. This is not just children. The imaginary, I don't know, whatever she had some kind of a deal. She woke up and swore that she had been beaten so badly that she had splinters all over her body. She has been, she went to a forensic psychologist who told her, he said, I cannot treat you. You have literally lost your mind. You're going to have mental health the rest of your life. And she believes none of it and no one.
Oh, that's tragic. That's tragic.
Does this stuff eat up your brain,
Ben?
Oh,
yeah, it's awful stuff. Awful, awful. And by the way, Sherry's point was well taken. It's not just children. It's you can be, you know, in your, you won't, typically if you're doing it, typically if you're older and you're doing it, you've got a lot of other issues going on. So people like that don't necessarily live long lives, but the cases you're talking about, a raise and the clubs, those tend to be teenagers and kids, obviously. But no, I didn't mean to say that it was only kids. There's definitely a lot of older folks that use them. They're so easy to obtain, George, then you can get really, really high in a very short time for not a lot of cost. They're very inexpensive. So there's a lot of incentive for people to go ahead and do these things because they're so easy to, relatively easy to obtain, although it is getting more difficult.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It really is. Justin's in Las Vegas, west of the Rockies. Justin, thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, Justin.
All right, I'm a first-time caller. actually didn't think I was going to get through, but when I was younger in the rave scene, so to speak, and I grew up here in Las Vegas, we used to give out these testing kits. And the kits we gave out were to test what types of drugs, specifically like methamphetamine, opiates, that sort of thing, in ecstasy.
Can they do the cathinones?
When you're saying that, you're referring to bath salts.
Bath salts, yeah. Can they test for bath salts?
I don't know what it's like now. I'm 32, so this was back before my 20s even, you know, out of high school. But I'm sure that they can. And the biggest thing, and what I wanted to get to you guys for the parents and the kids out there, which is most important, is in terms of the street reference to it, Molly should be literally pure MDMA.
Should be.
And I've seen it before, and I've even had it lab tested in research that I've done, where the people that are, you know, whatever, in that business, are literally having chemists make it no different than you would get at a compound pharmacy.
MDMA?
And I think it's important to separate, like, the bath salts and the ecstasy from the term Molly.
That's right.
And that the term Molly should be MDMA. And I'm wondering in this story that...
It's not. The story's very misleading. They call everything Molly. They call it all Molly.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I was misinformed.
It's a catch-all phrase.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, the gentleman's point is well taken. Molly is, like as I was saying earlier, is the molecule, and it was MDMA. It was pure MDMA. But once that became difficult to make and difficult to find, unscrupulous, and because it was a generic term, it wasn't illegal. It's not illegal, but it wasn't. They could get away with doing it because it was a generic term. So they stuck other drugs, which were much easier to obtain.
Let me ask Justin. Justin, of course, being in Vegas, party town, do you still see a lot of this out there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the research I did on the Molly was recent. I mean, this was in the last few years. And it was, you know, the club scene is very popular within. It was primarily, as far as from what I knew, the limited research that they give me in terms of what they were doing, because these are basically people that were selling it. They said, sorry, I have a dog in the
back. That's okay.
They said that. It's all people over 21.
Yeah, I think so. We're almost out of time. Ben, I want to thank you for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Doctor, pharmacist Ben Fuchs, of course. He's part of the criticalhealthnews.com team, and he does have a toll-free number at 1-855-949-RADIO. Read his blog article at Critical Health News about Molly, and you'll get a better perspective of what's going on around the country and in Canada. It's happening there. I had a call in Winnipeg that I didn't have time to get to. It's all over the place. Up next, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us on Coast to Coast AM.